You're listening to CITR Radio 101.9 FM in Vancouver. We're broadcasting from unceded Musqueam territory in British Columbia. What does it take to succeed as a young entrepreneur? Let's find out with today's guest, Matt Mullenweg. Welcome to another episode of Question Everything, where we connect young leaders with experts in entrepreneurship, publishing, and design. I'm your host, Carly Sotis, and today we have Matt Mullenweg with us on the show. Matt is the founding developer of WordPress, which is used by over 23% of the web. Matt is also the founder of Automattic, which is the company behind WordPress and a number of other open source projects, which employs hundreds of people around the world. In today's episode, we talk about the lessons that Matt learned in Boy Scouts and as a musician, and how they've prepared him for the challenges he's faced throughout his career. We also discuss the importance of curiosity, failure, and how he made the difficult decision to drop out of college. Finally, we have the opportunity to ask Matt what he looks for in prospective employees and talk about what it takes to stand out and succeed in the hiring process. So thank you so much for being with us, Matt.
Hello, Vancouver.
So WordPress is an open source project that you started working on when you were only 19. And I'm wondering if you could tell us a bit about the journey leading up to that point in your life.
Sure. My youth, I won't say misspent, but I focused a lot more on the arts. So I played the saxophone and I went to a school that was dedicated to performing arts in Houston, Texas. And that's kind of what I thought I would do. But along the way, I started making websites for local musicians, usually in exchange for music lessons. And just kind of caught the bug of the web and programming and helping other people publish, which has kind of become my, not kind of, it has become my life's mission.
How did you first become interested in code and say, I want to start making websites and get into that industry?
First in the code, you know, my father was a computer engineer his whole life. And so from even before I was born, he was programming computers. And so it was always around the house. And it was more that sort of background. And also you kind of want to be like your dad when you're a little kid. So I wanted to follow in his footsteps, combined with just the explosion of the web. I mean, we had the web at home, first in dial-up, and then with sort of DSL, so broadband. And just, you could learn anything. Like, you didn't need to go to a library to get a book and learn something. It was all right there. So you're really only limited by your curiosity. And I was very, very curious, and so I learned a lot, just kind of Googling around and reading lots of tutorials.
Did you always have dreams of becoming an entrepreneur when you were young, or making a big impact on the world, or did you kind of start out doing it for fun?
I don't know why, but I always had like little businesses, like a window cleaning business or like a gardening business. I thought all you needed to have a business was a business card. So you could buy like these sheets that were perforated and you could print on them, and then you could like tear the perforation and have these little business cards. And so that was, I probably had a dozen different quote-unquote businesses when I was young.
Now all you need to have a business is a website.
Yeah.
Now, could you walk us through the process of how you first got started working on WordPress and how it developed into what we know it as today?
Sure. I was blogging at the time, and blogs weren't new. They were probably 5 or 6 years old, if not more. But it was still a relatively small community, and the software for making the blogs was pretty hard to use and wasn't really advanced yet, even though there were some companies. Like, Google had Blogger at this time already, and there was a competitor that's not around anymore called Six Apart that was pretty good. So I was just using the software and thought, this could be better. And the big thing that was different with WordPress from many of the others was that WordPress was open source, meaning that the code belonged to everyone. It wasn't just, you weren't at the mercy of one company or one person for how the software would evolve. Much like the Wikipedia, it was completely open to the world. Anyone could see how it worked. Anyone could modify it. Anyone could contribute changes. Anyone could use it however they liked. There was no cost or license restrictions.
So when you identified the problem, what were some of the steps you took to start saying, hey, this could be fixed and this is how I'm going to make it happen?
There were really two, and this mirrors how WordPress works today, where WordPress is really known for being amazing for high-end users like developers, but also being easy to learn for new people. So the equivalent of that was I myself, as the developer, wanted more features for my own website, which today is at ma.tt. So you can go there and see my blog today. It's going on 14, 15 years now. And so still, sometimes new features are driven by things I want for my own website. But I also wanted all my friends to have websites because, you know, that was just the cool thing to do. We all started these websites. But they were, you know, one was a violinist, one was a visual artist, one was a dancer. You know, they all were mostly from an arts background.
What were you and blogging about at the time?
You know, we would blog. What would we blog? We'd blog sort of, there was one woman who, she was an artist, but she was a great writer. So she would actually post a lot of poetry. I would talk about technology and politics and economics and sort of the news and topics I was reading about. One friend did a lot of funny stuff, so she was kind of a humorist, and so she would post like funny stories or funny anecdotes or short stories. So everyone just used it like a creative expression. And so making the software easy for them to use, I mean, mm-hmm. they were kind of the first five users of WordPress, helped me think through like making things intuitive and accessible.
For a taste of the classics with a twist, join me, Marguerite, with Classical Chaos, Sunday mornings starting at 9, right here on CITR 101.9 FM, Vancouver, Canada.
You're listening to Question Everything on CITR Radio 101.9 FM in Vancouver. I'm your host, Carly Sotis, and right now we're speaking with Matt Mullenweg, who's the founding developer of WordPress.
Did you always see the potential in WordPress and predict that it would have the impact that it's had today, or was that completely beyond your wildest dreams?
Certainly not in the first year or two, but after that, once it started to pick up steam and momentum with the community, you know, we had people all over the world using WordPress. And I remember the very first translation, which is someone who had downloaded a software, gone through probably 10 or 15,000 lines of code, and changed every place it was English into Japanese.
Wow.
And I saw that and I was like, wow, I can't even imagine how much time this took this person. Like, and plus it was so cool seeing the software. It was like, it looked like something I recognized, but then the language, Japanese letters are so beautiful. Like, it was almost like something far beyond I could imagine. And that's when I really got the inkling that this could be something much, much bigger. It's also around the time we adopted our mission. So the mission of WordPress is democratize publishing. And just democratize means make it accessible for anyone, anywhere in the world to have a voice. The world will be a better place. The freedom of people to share ideas and thoughts in long form and short form photos, even if they're not something I would personally agree with. Ultimately, that dialogue and conversation makes the world more open, more transparent, more connected than it would be otherwise.
For sure. That's such a beautiful way to look at things. But I'm sure that there were so many challenges and legal issues that you dealt with over the years with making it open source. And I'm wondering how you dealt with those challenges and if there was any major mistakes you made.
Oh, so many. We've kind of stumbled from one mistake to another week to week. But I think the key is just, you know, if I could go back, I wouldn't want to change any of the mistakes because I feel like every single one of them, even the huge ones, like once in, I think it was like 2006, I essentially sold space on the WordPress website to someone who ended up being a spammer. So there was literally spam on the WordPress website and Google banned us and everything. And wow, that was really bad, but but I learned a ton from it. And we developed a closer relationship with Google. They reinstated us and brought everything back. I learned to think about spam in a different way, and it actually inspired the first commercial product that we created, which was called it's a Kismet. So it basically blocks spam from your website. So it was very painful in the moment, but ultimately I feel like, you know, growth comes from adversity.
For sure. And you were so young when you started. What was it like for you to start managing so much responsibility and success at that age?
You know, I think a lot of things prepared me for it. You know, being a musician, you rehearse and you practice and sometimes you lead the band and sometimes you follow. And like all sides of that are very, very important. Being in Boy Scouts, you know, like that was a great program both for getting me out of the city, but also just like they teach you a lot about leadership and volunteering and all of these sorts of things. So I feel like a lot of the experiences I had when young, you learn sort of the common sense basics of people working together, which is really what an open source project is. Like, it's not anyone telling anyone else what to do. It's really people volunteering and working together. And then, but I would say that I'm still learning many aspects of that. You know, I just became the CEO of Automattic about 2.5 years ago now. And there's not a day that goes by that I don't learn something new about how to better manage people or how people might interact or something new about, you know, people's backgrounds or where they're from. You know, we have people in 50 countries, so really from all over the world, that, you know, is more information that can help me tailor management to them and tailor the team to how they work. So it's really an ongoing process. I hope I never stop learning.
That's awesome. I feel like a lot of people get the experiences you mentioned, like in Boy Scouts and music. A lot of us rely on college and university to do that, but you actually dropped out to pursue a career and working on WordPress and at CNET Networks. And I'm wondering, was that a difficult decision for you to make?
It was a difficult decision. So while I was in, I had kind of a non-traditional college experience because I decided a little bit last minute to stay in Houston. And so the place I got into was the University of Houston, which at the time, I think it's different now, but at the time, basically it was a commuter college, so no one really lived on campus. And so I got an apartment, but I didn't spend a whole lot of time on the campus. And, you know, the people, I was in class with people, but I didn't really make any connections with my classmates. So really my strong connections were to the people I had either gone to school with in high school, because the high school was very tight-knit. There's only about, call it 450, 500 people in the whole school. And some musicians and friends. And then, of course, the people who I met online. So those were really my core communities. But the, you know, my parents still saved up and, you know, education was incredibly important to them. My father, when he went to U of H 30, 40 years before, you know, he had gone to night school. So he had already had my older sister, was already married, and had a day job and then would go at night to get his degree. So I felt in dropping out, I had a scholarship. I was going during the day. Like, I had all these opportunities. I felt like I was squandering an opportunity. But the, you know, at this point, WordPress had started to take off a bit. And when I got the job from this company in San Francisco, it was when they offered to move me out. And the salary was, you know, more than I could have. It was like a dream job, you know? It was, in fact, even at that time, more than my dad made, even though he had been at, I think, Brown & Root for like 20, 25 years. So the I was like, wow, well, you know, I could stay in school 2 more years and hope to get an opportunity like this, or I could go for it now.
Right.
And so I moved out to San Francisco, and I looked back. I missed my family a ton, but definitely the opportunities there. At the time, it was kind of a quiet or dark period because there had been the dot-com crash. So really the only people left in San Francisco were people who were really passionate about the web. You know, all the people who had just been there to make money had kind of already left. So it was a really rich time, and I learned so much about entrepreneurship, about investing, about creating companies while in that environment. There's a reason it's typically seen as one of the best places in the world for that.
Would you encourage other young people who have similar opportunities or have ideas for startups to drop out of college too? Or do you feel like you were in a very unique situation?
It's funny because now I'll give like lectures or things at different colleges. And when I visit like the Stanford campus or something like that, I was like, man, if I had gone here, I definitely would not have dropped out. Like, you know, it was just, it was kind of a combination of, I wasn't super engaged with the classes I was in at the time. Particularly the technology classes were a bit behind the time. You know, my strongest sort of personal relationships were more outside of school, and then just an incredible job opportunity. So those things all combined to be pretty unique. So I don't encourage people to drop out at all, but make sure, you know, don't rely just on school for your education. The luxury of being in school is that you don't have a 9-to-5 job necessarily, and that you can devote yourself purely to edification. So I would say, you know, if you're in school, like, make sure that you savor every moment of that and read as much as possible and learn as much as possible and, like, really devote yourself to your studies, because it's an opportunity of which to, like, you probably won't get a similar one the rest of your lifetime. So the things you learn there are kind of what's going to carry you through a lot of your the rest of your adult life.
What were some of the things that you learned when you started working in San Francisco that other people might learn through college?
Well, there's some things I learned through college that I think actually helped me a ton, particularly the study of the classics, you know, reading about Thucydides and the history of the Peloponnesian War, or Socrates, or many of the classics, you know, are relatively universal. So, and I had a few fantastic professors at U of H that that really influenced how I thought about things, like philosophy of language. At CNET, what I learned was just how to be in a professional environment, which I had never really gotten training for. So, you know, I had a manager, I had an office, I went into work every day, you know, I wore my khaki pants, my button-down shirt. people relied on me for things. I did status updates. They put me in a management training course, which was really nice. So, like, you know, kind of that, you know, normal company environment was really, really valuable, both for what I learned and also then what I wanted not to do when I started Automattic. So there were certainly some things that I saw, perhaps like bureaucracy around, for example, getting resources to be a developer. Like, that took a couple steps when I was at CNET. And so when starting Automattic, I was like, okay, let's make it so developers can kind of self-serve and have all the resources and things they need without having to go through someone else. So any number of those things, I think, were extremely valuable.
As your company has expanded, has it been difficult for you to let go of running the day-to-day operations?
That's what I do every day, is day-to-day operations. So,
but I guess to give up a lot of your control.
I never saw it as a control thing or not. It's more like, what's the breadth of what you're able to do? So if you're one person working alone, you know, you're very, very limited in what you can put out there in the world. And in fact, when I look in my life at the things I appreciate the most, even in art, you know, it's the work of a team often. It's people collaborating, working together. It's musicians, you know, riffing off each other. It's composers and arrangers. It's artists who have whole studios full of people or inspired by other artists and would collaborate with them. Like, the all great things, I feel like, come from teams and groups. And so when someone new joins Automattic, especially in the early days when there was just a couple of us, I saw it as like, oh, great. You know, someone who's going to do this thing better than I could. And because they'll do that, I can focus on something else. Maybe something new, or maybe something only I can do for now, or maybe something that just we were ignoring before.
I know that you're still very involved in the hiring process and that you have a unique way of hiring people, which has led to a really low turnover rate. And I'm wondering if you could tell us more about the hiring process and how you focus on fostering teamwork.
Sure. Well, first and foremost, and this is especially important for people in Vancouver, is that we hire people from all over the world. So we don't say that you need to live in or move to, you know, San Francisco or New York or any place like that. We want people to live and work wherever they're happiest, wherever they want to be. So that's the first thing. And honestly, I think one of the most important. Second in our process is that, I mean, everyone's experienced this where, let's say you're starting a new job and you're like, okay, we need another widget maker. You're going to think to widget makers that you've worked with in the past because you know what they're good at, what they're bad at. So as we were starting, you know, just a couple of people, we didn't know that many people. So hiring purely through referrals would only, it would be fairly limited. So what we started to look at is, so we kind of made the mistakes in the early days of, like, you know, people would apply and they'd have a really impressive resume, or they'd have a really great interview, or, you know, we did the sort of classic stuff, or like we said, write some code on a whiteboard, or we made all those mistakes. And we found that there was almost no correlation between how well someone did in the interview and then how well they did once they joined Automattic. So what we started to look at was, how can we recreate that sort of element of working together? Because folks who would come into the open source project, let's say people who are volunteers for WordPress, when we hired them, we knew exactly how they worked because we'd already been working together for months. So we created what's called the trial process. And it's kind of a two-way thing. So it allows a potential prospective employee to see how Automattic works on the inside. Because, again, you can listen to all of our press and this interview and everything, but sometimes how a company works on the inside is very different than how they're portrayed or perceived on the outside. So someone will actually come in and work alongside real automaticians in a real environment so they can see exactly what they're getting into. And then vice versa, we can see how they, it's a small amount of work, you know, it's not a long-term thing. We want to get it done as quickly as possible. But it looks just like the work they'll do on the job and how they communicate and everything becomes the number one indicator we've seen for how they'll perform an automatic. This also allows us to hire people from non-traditional backgrounds, meaning not just, you know, living someplace else, but maybe never finishing high school, or maybe, you know, we have a lot of people who left the workforce maybe 10 or 20 years ago because they became a parent or they pursued something different, and now they're getting back into it. Most companies will look at the resume and say, okay, what were you doing for these 10 years? And the truth is maybe you were being a mom or a parent, or maybe you're taking care of one of your parents, you know, elder care. But we don't care about that. We look at, you know, was your application a good one? Did it have attention to the detail? Did you write a good cover letter? And then how do you actually do the work that is going to be the job? And so as a result of that, we're about 470 people at Automatic now, and we'll hire probably another 100 to 150 over the next year. So we're growing very quickly, and we're able to bring in really interesting folks, people who just did some totally different stuff before they joined. Like one guy was a traveling tour salesman. We've had someone who was a full-time musician. We had someone who was essentially like a sheep herder, a guy who was a full-time tea like tea master.
That's amazing.
In addition to folks who worked at Google and Facebook and all the traditional places. So this creates a really fun mix of people.
For sure. What are some of the things that you look for in resumes and cover letters? It sounds like you try and get people from different backgrounds, but what makes you choose somebody, you know, who's worked at Google before versus somebody who's a tea master?
So the thing, obviously, if you've had a job experience that looks just like us, like working at Google or Facebook, like that's kind of, that's an easy one, right? Mm-hmm. Because it's likely that you'll have the experience and capability to perform well, let's say as an engineer at Automatic. Although we don't always hire all those people, you know, those companies can have a lot of dead weight as well. So the number one thing for me is often the cover letter. So we make it totally free form, like you just email in an address. And we see what people put there, you know. There's no formula for right or wrong. I mean, sometimes they're very short, sometimes they're long. Sometimes they have photos, sometimes they have no visuals. Sometimes someone links to a video. But almost always they tell a story and they show an amount of work that someone put into the application, you know. Mm-hmm. If you think about it, getting a new job, if it works, it should be a life-changing thing. And so, like, have someone proofread your application.
For sure.
Could be your buddy. With WordPress, there's lots of opportunities to get involved as a volunteer. So I definitely look for that. If people have volunteer experience either in technology or outside of it. It could be like a local it could be something like a Scouts program. It could be an SPCA, which is like, you know, taking care of pets. It could be at an elder home. It could be pretty much anything. But people who volunteer kind of shows some of that above and beyond. So that's just any sort of things. I think there's some guidelines on the website as well. So following those is also good.
For people who are just entering the workforce, I feel like there's a pressure to do very generic cover letters. And I'm wondering if you look at those kind of cover letters and say, oh, no, I've read this before. And they did, like, is there really have to be something that captures your attention?
I try to dig into everyone, you know, just to sort of give everyone a fair shake. But you definitely, if you're just going to send like a generic, like, you know, regards, please bring this resume to your attention, you're starting with a little bit of a disadvantage. Because you're not really, you really think about it from the point of view of the person reading it. Like, one, they're reading thousands. So, but two, what are they looking for? They're looking for someone who they really want to work alongside. You know, someone who's going to be a great colleague. Someone who's accountable. Someone who can do the work. Someone who's always learning. Someone who has good taste. Yeah, so try to demonstrate those things through your application.
LiveBand.com is Vancouver's community-driven concert calendar. New shows are added daily by the city's most active promoters, musicians, and by the driving force of the music scene, the fans. LiveBand.com's listings are different because they are integrated with profiles updated by bands and business owners as they promote upcoming events. Check out the archives to see how closely we've worked within the community to put on the shows you love. Visit LiveMusicVancouver.com for the latest independent and major label event listings. LiveBand.com, Vancouver's community-driven concert calendar.
You're listening to Question Everything on CITR Radio 101.9 FM in Vancouver. And today we're speaking with Matt Mullenweg, who's the founding developer of WordPress.
I wanted to talk to you also about WordCamps, which are locally organized events put together by people who come together and share knowledge and ideas. And you actually started the first WordCamps, and I'm wondering how you got the idea for that and how it's developed.
Sure. And first, if it's okay, I will say that there's a WordCamp coming up in Vancouver.
Oh, wonderful.
On August 27th. You can go to a local WordCamp and see what it is. The idea was basically that, you know, so much of especially open source collaboration is online and virtual. And what we really want to do is bring people together, because I truly believe that technology is at its best when it brings people together. So yeah, the idea, I mean, conferences are awesome, but they're often really, really expensive and, you know, kind of buttoned down and have bad food. And so we just wanted to create something where, you know, sponsors could help cover most of the cost of it. We still charge a little bit of a ticket price. Tickets are generally about $20, but that'll include the full day of sessions, which are all volunteers, you know, teaching different things about WordPress or blogging or photography. Often now WordCamps, and I believe Vancouver has like a developer track, a business track, and a beginner track. So even if you're totally brand new to WordPress, you can go to the WordCamp and learn a lot, you know, really from scratch. And yeah, the $20 usually includes like lunch, all the sessions, and t-shirts, and often like a party afterwards. So
that's amazing.
I think it's kind of the best deal out there. But that's because supporters, you know, they're nonprofit events. Like, no one makes any money off it. And everyone volunteers their time, both to speak, to organize, to everything. So definitely if you go to a WordCamp, make sure to thank extra all of the volunteers and the organizers. And then, of course, sponsors pitch in to help outlay the cost for like venues and food and everything.
I know that you also support so many different charities, and I'm wondering what impact that's had on your life.
You know, I think everyone's experienced it when you help someone else with no sort of expectation of something in return. Those are often your best moments.
Mm.
You know, it kind of gives you a feeling that is better than when you do something for yourself, even, you know, which I think is really interesting about human nature. Like, why do we get more of a sort of reward in how we feel from helping others more than helping ourselves? Maybe that's why, you know, societies have developed and humans have done so much cool stuff over the past millennia. But yeah, supporting charities, I've been very fortunate. You know, what I love to do, which is create publishing systems like WordPress, has also been lucky to be something which is financially successful and a good business, which I'm really glad, because maybe, you know, my passion would have been like making Elvis quilts or something, and it wouldn't have been, but it happened. And so it just feels like the right thing to do, because I've benefited so much from the people who came before me. Mm. You know, the obvious folks like my immediate family that raised me and helped support me, but also like everyone who put information onto the web before that I learned from, everyone who's helped a friend discover WordPress or get started with it. I mean, so much. I'm where I am because of so much else that when I have an opportunity to, I try to get back. And, you know, the tough thing is choosing what to do, mm-hmm. because there's so many problems in the world. There's local problems, there's national problems, there's international problems. But I think if you can at least try to make a difference in at least one person's life, and to kind of go back to Boy Scouts, leave things a little better than you found them, that's intrinsically good. And it's something that we can all do, even if we don't have necessarily money. We could have time or just effort.
For sure. Well, thank you so much for giving up your time today to share your experiences with us.
Appreciate it.
Thank you so much for joining us on another episode of Question Everything. I'm your host, Carly Sotis, and each week I bring you inspiration and insights from creative minds and experts in entrepreneurship, publishing, and design. If you enjoyed today's episode, you can download the show at iTunes, SoundCloud, and at citr.ca.